Welcome back to Sling the Biscuit. This is going to be episode 3, season 4 of the new show, presented by the Nation Network and Sheath Underwear, the incredible team of Sheath Underwear. We're live from the amazing studio here in downtown Vancouver at Wall Center. My podcasting corgi's back. You can hear him behind me. I think he's got to go outside. I should have taken him over for the start of the show. But on the other end of this call is my incredible co-host. He's good looking and he slices and dices it up in the city of Buffalo, New York. He's a proud Buffalonian, Rob Lalonde. What's up, dude?
Let's go. Here we go. Back in the studio with Trav. Back in the mix.
I will say, this is awesome. Being in the studio, we got Mr. Producer and Mr. Producer's intern in the back. They do an amazing job every single week when we come in here to record. I got you. I got everything. We got the podcast and Corgi. Life's good here in Vancouver. Life's good down here at downtown Wall Center.
Yeah, the new home, right? Vancouver. That's going to be the spot, you think?
That's the spot for now. Actually, what, you know what? Let's just get into it.
What brought you to Vancouver? How did you end up there? I mean, you're from Winnipeg. How did you end up living in Vancouver?
Oh boy, you want to start off with a hot story. Rob, we got to ease our way into this.
Come on, man.
I'll give it to you. Okay. So, I was playing hockey in Sweden. This is 2020. Actually, not even Sweden. Backed us up. This is April of 2020. I'm doing all the skating in the ponds and the outdoor rinks and the fields and the ditches and anywhere else I can find a frozen sheet of water. And a man by the name of Brad Sherwin, who you would have seen 2 weeks ago in my latest vlog or one of my latest vlogs, skating outdoors in Vancouver, he messaged me on Twitter, of all places. He messaged me. He's basically like, hey, your skating sucks. I could help you. This is what I think. You should come out and skate with me in Pasco Villana here in Vancouver. And I said, sure. The world shut down. I got nothing going on. I need to make more videos. So sure, I'd love to. And so I'm in Sweden. Things get shut down. I come back home because the rinks closed down where I was at in Varberg. And I came back. I skated here in Vancouver for about 5 days. My goalie coach and I, we drove 24 hours. Guy St. Vincent and I, we drove 24 hours straight in the middle of the night from Winnipeg to Regina, Calgary, through the mountains, arrived into Vancouver later that evening. And we spent 5 days skating with Pasco. And I just fell in love with working with him. I knew probably about 5 minutes into working with him that like, this was my guy. Like he was going to be my ticket to the chocolate factory, if you will. And then fast forward, I worked
Willy
with him.
Willy Wonka.
Literally, the Willy Wonka of goaltending, if you want to call him that. But in March, came back to work with him again. And then before the start of the season, to go back to Sweden, I stayed all of August, worked with him, fell in love with, again, just more of what we were doing together. And then fast forward to August of 2022, this is an amazing story. I had broken up with my girlfriend at the time in Winnipeg, and I still had my trip coming up to Vancouver in about 2 weeks, less than. And so my thought process to save some money was instead of getting an Airbnb, because Airbnbs are astronomical out here, I'm going to try to find any female I can on Hinge and ask if I can pay your month of rent, because it's probably going to be cheaper to pay for the month of rent than it is an Airbnb. And I found one lady. She's an Irish lady. And she allowed me to come stay at her place, which was still cheaper than any Airbnb. That lasted about 4 days before I generally thought she was going to put a knife in my neck. And
yeah, I mean, you're lucky she didn't.
It was an interesting scenario, man.
That's a classic Trav move.
I remember when I told you that, you're like, man, that's really smart. That's working smarter, not harder. But then I FaceTimed you like 3 days later. I'm like, bro, I think she's going to kill me. I got to get out of here. And then I ended up getting an Airbnb in the first place or afterwards anyway. But so I get the Airbnb and I met a girl. This is still like end of August, first couple days of September. And we hit it off. Probably about three and a half weeks of seeing each other nonstop. Falling in love, all that great stuff. And then I went off for the season in Motor City in Detroit. And we had been FaceTiming every single day, 2, 3, 5 hours a day, every single day after practice. Things were really going well. And then I knew I needed my hip surgery coming up. And so when I decided to leave the team first couple of days of December, I was like, well, I need somewhere to live. Obviously, I'm going to have my hip surgery. I'm going to be a vegetable for a little bit. And she had gotten kicked out of her current place. I think they were charging her not enough money for rent. So they're like, oh, we're going to kick you out. We're going to renovate the place. And then you can move somewhere else. I think that was one of those situations. So she had asked me to move in with her. And I was like, well, I can live with her or I can live with my mom. My mom can take care of me. And I was like, I think this is much better. Plus, Vancouver in the winter is better than Winnipeg. And then being in January, we moved in together with a place. That lasted about 8 months. And then moved on. And then fast forward to now where, you know, with the network deal, with the Nation Network, because we have studios now in Vancouver, Edmonton, Calgary, Montreal, Toronto. And I love Vancouver to begin with. This all kind of came together. It was like, you got the studio in Vancouver. I'm very familiar with the city. I love being here. My goalie coach is here. Winter in Vancouver is better than winter in Winnipeg. That's why I'm in Vancouver full-time. Well, as full-time as you can be, as trying to be mobile in the game with hockey. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's a jumping off point. Like, you know, you got some projects. Like you mentioned last week's episode, you're maybe heading over to Russia. So, you obviously, you think Vancouver's the best place for you to train and, like, keep your career moving forward?
I got some bad news for you. So,
oh, no.
My passport expires middle or end of April, and
yeah. You have to have a 6 months, right?
Correct. You need to have a 6 month buffer in order for it to be valid to go into Russia. So I'm talking to my agent. He's like, "How fast can you get a passport?" I'm making calls. I'm like, "I can get everything done tomorrow, but it's going to take about 2 to 3 weeks to get one in person, like in my hands." And he's like, "Well, you need it in 3 days, or this isn't going to work."
That's terrible, dude. Like, actually, there's other ways to do that. I don't know how it works in Canada, but I recently just did a passport in the States and had to do a rapid passport and ended up getting it in like a day. But you have to, you had to pull some moves. Well, I don't know how it works up in Canada, but here in the States, there's a passport agency. And if you go there and you have travel plans that come up within like 2 to 3 weeks, they can rush you a passport. And I got mine in one day. So it's possible. I don't know how it is for you, but that would be a bummer to miss that opportunity. Why'd you let your passport get that low, bro?
I didn't think someone was coming. I thought, honestly, I was just going to go do it maybe like a month beforehand, because with the Fed season ending in April, I was like, well, this is good timing. And if you're in the U.S., you can come back on an expired passport. You just can't go in. So my thought process was, you know what I mean? So that kind
of
worked out.
A lot of places won't let you in. If you have 6 months, they won't let you in the country.
What would have been? I came in September, and 6 months would have been October. So yeah, that would have made sense whether they let me in. But I talked to my agent. I was like, I don't think I can get done. And they've already moved on. They found another goalie. So the Russia thing is not happening, which sucks. But
oh, man, that's tough. Well, hey, like I mentioned before, man, my boy Prosvetov, he invited us to go to Moscow to possibly train with him, you know, after the NHL season's over next year. So maybe we can do a slanging podcast in Russia with Prosvetov.
Maybe I can be an employee for Buttons. I can do the podcast, be a Buttons employee, yeah. I can do the weather on Dave's.
Just make sure you
show.
Get your passport taken care of, bro.
Well, I'm going to go get that done first thing tomorrow morning for whatever's coming up. Because I have a couple pokers in the fire that are very exciting. You want to get to that before we get to the Fed talk?
Yeah, let's hear what you got going, man.
So this episode is being pre-recorded a couple days in advance because I'm going to be flying to Edmonton, I believe, on Wednesday coming up, and then going up to Fort McMurray. I have no idea the power and the stability of the Wi-Fi that I'm going to have access to. And I don't want to try to mess around trying to find a place to record on the res and all this stuff. So if we figure let's record this episode a couple days earlier than we normally would, and we'll get everything up, ready to go for Sunday, which is why you're listening to this on Sunday. And so that's coming up. I also got offered, there's a senior hockey team in Colorado, in Vail, Colorado, and they offered to fly me out, and I'm trying to get them to give me the train back because I really want to take the California Zephyr from Colorado back west. But they're going to fly me out for, I think, March 1st and 2nd to come play back-to-back games, a home and an away game. But senior hockey in Colorado in the Rocky Mountains. Tell me that doesn't sound exciting for the beginning of March.
That's not bad. That sounds similar to like what you're heading to do in Edmonton, right? Like playing in that tournament? Is that going to be your – you think that's going to be your new – well, at least in the short term, like your these like short weekend stints? Is that what you're going to use to keep the career kind of going and keep your game sharp or what?
Honestly, I think that might be the way to go because I have, at least in Vancouver, we have the studio here for the podcast, which is my full-time thing for the moment, for the time being. I have my goalie coach here to get training and ready for. And if I'm being honest with you, the idea of playing a weekend tournament up in Fort McMurray where there's a $500 cash prize for best goalie and a $7,500 cash prize for winning teams and doing all this this traveling, seeing the world, that sounds a lot better than sleeping on a garage floor or on a couch, playing for $125 a week in the Fed and getting the Little Caesars pizza special and the all-you-can-eat food poisoning at Olive Garden with a side of chicken parmesan before games. This does sound a lot better. And I get to come back.
It does sound a lot better, man. Honestly, your living stories, like your living situation in the Fed is enough for me. Like I got to hear more. I want to hear more about like some of these apartments that you guys have lived in and like sleeping on the floor and like sleeping on the couch. I mean, like, that's...
You want the living situation? I'll give you the breakdown.
Yeah, playing pro hockey at that level is unreal, bro.
Dude, I'll tell you my whole living situation. So I'll give you my first taste was in Columbus 2019 for training camp. They were really good. I got to share a hotel room with Will Laporte. He's a legendary tough guy, nail gun fighter. He played for the Columbus River Dragons, and he played, I think, 10 years previously for the Thousand Island Privateers. I could be wrong. But he was my roommate, and he was an absolute beauty. He was a really cool guy to share a room with. And then fast forward to Motor City. I came earlier to Detroit, and I guess... You know, my GM told me, hey, team housing ain't ready. So God bless goalie coach Bill Ruggiero. He ended up competing for the emergency backup goalie position for the Florida Panthers like 10 years ago. He played pro over in Finland. He went to camp for the Nashville Predators. He had a very established career, and he's a legend in the Detroit area. But he was our goalie coach for the team and said, hey, man, why don't you come stay at my place? I got a beach property or a lake house because there really isn't that many beaches in Detroit. And you can come stay here with one of the other guys, and you're more than welcome to stay as long as you need, and I did. And that was an awesome place. And my roommate.
Yeah, that place is pretty sick. I actually saw that place.
Dude, yeah, you were there with me. The place was awesome. My roommate, he had a little bit of a gambling addiction, and I told him, please stop gambling at like 2, 3, 4 in the morning because I'd be trying to sleep, and then you just hear, yeah, I hit the parlay. Like, he was so excited, and I was like, bro.
Oh, man.
Bro, we got practice at 11. Please, go to bed. I'm begging you. And he'd be like raving, and I'd be like smoking the place. There'd be like music and disco balls and lights. Like, this is not the place for us to be living together. We are such polar opposites. So he ended up moving to one of the other houses, and I lived in Bill's place by myself for about – I would say about a month, month and a bit. And that was probably by far the best living situation I had in the Fed. Bill gave me his 98 Ford F-150, so I had wheels to get wherever I needed to go. If I need to go to the Apple store for headphones or if I need, like, whatever it was. I always had access and had wheels to go to practice. I had quiet time. I'm probably the most extroverted introvert you'll ever meet. So I had the ability to have private time outside the rink and then go socialize with the guys at the rink. And then having the beachfront property, you get to see a lot of really nice sunrises and sunsets. It's just a great place to live. And then Bill ended up selling the beach property, I think mid-November-ish. And so I ended up moving to the team housing. And oh boy, was this a change. I went from living by myself in Bill's guest house with everything I needed and a truck, to no room, to sleeping on a couch. That was actually, well, I slept on a blow-up mattress and there was a hole in it. So I remember I went to bed one night and I woke up like 2 hours later. I was flat on the floor because I think I had a hole in it. So I ended up migrating to the couch. And I was like, this isn't bad. And I got the living room to myself. They moved another guy into the other couch beside me like 2-3 days later. So that was interesting.
Oh, my gosh, dude.
We had a guy get called up. They're like, Trav, you got a bed, but you got to share the room with another guy. I'm like, fine. At least I have my own bed. The guy came back down. They're like, Trav, you got to get out. You got to move back to the couch. So I went back to the couch. And then I ended up leaving for my hip surgery. So that was my living situation in Motor City. I went to Watertown. And if you listen to the untold stories from Watertown and Motor City, you'll know a lot more than what I'm telling you right here, which you can join Patreon page for $5 a month to get access to those stories. They're very juicy. But in Watertown, I was promised my own room. I showed up, and I got to share.
Promised my own room.
Dude, that was a selling point. After living on the couch and the blow-up mattress in Motor City, the idea of having my own room was sexy. It was very appealing. And I showed up. I did not get my own room. I got to share a room. I had my mattress beside somebody else's mattress. I'll put a video on the video version of the show to get an understanding of what I was doing with. And there's a very specific individual. He got a lifetime ban from junior hockey in Canada. He was the only one in the house that got his own room. I remember all the guys in the house. We were just like shaking our head. We're like, this guy gets his own room? Like, we got guys on the team that are vets that are sharing a room. You know what I mean? Or guys living in the living room. Like, we had three.
Yeah, how did that guy end up with his own room? Did he negotiate that deal?
That if you want to find out the truth behind that, you got to join the Patreon page and listen to the untold stories. You'll find all the answers there because I'm not going to tell it to you publicly. But we had three rooms that had two beds, and then we had one room with one bedroom or like one mattress, and then we had three guys living in the living room. Or sorry, two guys in the living room. So we had nine guys in the house, and it was jam packed. And we had two bathrooms, and the one bathroom, like, somebody took a dump, plugged the toilet, took a dump on top of the plugged toilet, and then the thing just exploded everywhere. So the bathroom was like, we taped up the door. Like you couldn't get in there for like a month. Like, it was bad. So we had one functioning bathroom, nine dudes, and had to share a mattress or share a bedroom with I think I had three different guys that I shared bedrooms with. So that was that was the living situation in Watertown. I got moved to Mississippi.
Let's hear this one.
And I thought to myself, I'm like, this has got to be better. This, nine guys sharing one bathroom. It doesn't get much worse than that. Well, I go to Mississippi and everybody has their own room except for me. We had a goalie get called up to the SP. So there was an open bed. And I was like, can I take his bed? They're like, no, we don't know when he's coming back. So maybe just wait. I was like, I'm not going to touch his shit. I'll leave my stuff in the garage. I just want a bed. I'm begging you for a bed in my own room. Had to wait about a week. Week and a bit, because I was living on a mattress in the living room. So we just brought a mattress from like the out in the shed, plopped it right down in the middle of the living room. That was my bed. And then God bless the guys that I was living with. They were, a lot of them were really cool, but they loved to watch late night TV. And they'd stay up to the late hours. And I think they were all deaf because they'd listen to it on like level 75 volume. And I like to go to bed earlier. I'm an early bedtime kind of guy, like a 10, 10:30, 11 at the absolute most. Like 11 is really pushing for me personally. And so 11 o'clock, I'm in the mattress. I'm all, tucked away, ready to go to bed. And these guys are just starting, like they're binging TV series. And so I remember there was one time I was like, you guys planning on going to bed anytime soon? They're like, well, Trav, you can go to bed. And at that moment, I was like, you know what? I'm going to take my mattress. I'm going to put it in the garage. So for the rest of my time in Mississippi, I moved the mattress into the garage on a concrete floor, and I slept on the garage for the next week and a bit before they released me. And that was my living situation in the Fed. That's my living quarters.
If that's how it finishes out for you in the Fed, bro, I mean, that's one way to go. Into the garage, into the mattress. I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, I played in the minors, and I played junior B, and like, I never heard of living situations like that. I remember junior B hockey, we had five guys in a three bedroom, and it got pretty, you know, tight and grimy, but like what you're describing, like, it was a grown man living with like nine guys in the house. I mean, that's insane.
You know, my life coach likes to say, at 27 years old, I can live with nine guys in one functioning bathroom, but I don't have to. You understand where I'm getting at? I look at all the Fed living situations, though, as a badge of honor. I've talked about this before. Some people take it out of context, like, oh my God, he's complaining. He's a – bro, it is a badge of honor. To tell you on this podcast that I lived on a garage floor because the guys wanted to watch Entourage – great show, by the way – till 1 and 2 in the morning, that's a badge of honor. The fact that I was living on a couch that I was sharing the couch beside him in Motor City, that's a badge of honor. The fact that I was living on a mattress that was a blow-up mattress and it would deflate within an hour, sleeping basically on the hardwood floor, that's a badge of honor. All of this is badges of honor in the pro hockey ranks as far as I'm concerned.
I mean, you got to pay your dues, and that's part of it. You know what I mean? Like, it's funny because, like, you know, I played in the East Coast Hockey League, especially like coming right out of college. I was in the East Coast, which is like, you know, Double A. We used to joke about it, the premier Double A Hockey League. We always used to, like, we call it the Cheese Toast.
Yeah.
My boys on the team. And I remember they moved us when we first get there. You get a booster club, and like, they, you know, you get living situation. You know, I'm coming fresh out of college, so you get a roommate, but it's not like what you had. At least like in that level, we got a little apartment, two bedroom with like a roommate. So like, at least we had our own room. And I remember, I was in Reading, and we go into this apartment complex, and we first get there, and I got my roommate, we get settled in. It's not bad, it's all right, you know, it's like a, you know, it's just a two bedroom apartment, whatever. But this place was up in the woods, and this place was infested with wolf spiders, and I didn't even know what wolf spiders were at the time. I learned because they were everywhere. So the whole apartment complex had a wolf spider infestation, and literally, man, like, it was crazy. You'd be sitting on the couch after practice watching TV, and like, you'd look to the right on the arm of the couch, and there'd be like a giant wolf spider crawling. There'd be wolf spiders on the floor in the kitchen in the mornings before we would go to the rink. Like, it was insane. I remember I called the president of the booster club, who was a friend of mine, who became a really good friend of mine. But I'm like, you got to help me out. Like, I can't sleep here. Like, I'd wake up in the middle of the night. There'd be like, you turn on the light, a wolf spider would like run into the closet. I mean, it was crazy. Imagine, like, it was like Arachnophobia, the movie, like, where I'm just like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this is like my life right now. But hearing what you described, I would definitely rather have the wolf spiders than have the nine dudes in the one bathroom to get exploded everywhere. So,
oh man,
it's some life in the minors for you right there, man.
It's like nine dudes in one bathroom. It's like, I don't know what's worse. Whoever's showering is like, there's like a goddamn dolphin in here because the floor is just soaked like it's the Titanic here. That there's always dirty dishes in the sink. Someone's eaten my steak and my dates. Like, I got a bag of pitted dates. Somebody ate half of it. I think the wolf spiders ain't so bad.
Yeah, it's not bad. It all worked out.
Don't touch the dates. That's all I'm asking. Don't touch the dates. Don't touch my block of white
cheddar. Bro, you're on. I got you on the dates too. So I got you on the venti free Starbucks water, and I got you on the dates too. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah,
you grinding?
I always got a bag of dates.
That's my favorite snack. I'd say my number one calorie source is dates and pecans. I always tell people this, but like that's like my dessert. That's like my go to calorie source. And you obviously you're kind of on the wave. It sounds like, Trav.
Dude, shout out to my booster club. Joe and Ziva, the family over there in Watertown, they were so good. They'd always get me blocks of white cheddar cheese, some nuts sometimes, and bags of dates. I just have like dates and white cheddar and steaks. That was basically what I lived on in Watertown. It was amazing. So, guys, thank you so much. Joe's also a Patreon member too, but we'll get to the Patreon Q&A later on in the episode. So, but I did want to also give a shout out to Cheryl and Dwayne. I want to make sure I get that right. Cheryl and Dwayne in Watertown.
Who's Cheryl and Dwayne?
Cheryl is a season ticket holder for the Watertown Wolves. Now, at this moment in time, I'm still waiting for some cash on the Watertown jerseys I sold. I don't think I'm ever going to see them. But Cheryl and Dwayne. Cheryl's a season ticket holder for the Wolves, and she was so nice enough. She sent me my Watertown Wolves jersey. So I have like a whole like collection of jerseys at my mom's house. I want to hang up one day. So she sent me my actual jersey. So she paid good money for it. She bought it, and out of the goodness out of her heart, was like, here you go. I'm going to give it to you for free. Cheryl and Dwayne, thank you so much. That'll add to my nice jersey collection. I'm just waiting to try to get my hands on my Motor City and or Mississippi jersey, and I'll put those in the collection as well. But you guys are awesome. There was some Fed talk that I did want to get to for today. That'll be the, I guess, the headliner for today, if you want to call it that. Obviously, the Russia thing's not going through. I got some more updates on the European side shortly. But this is hot off the press. Daniel Diamond Hands Amesbury. Diamond Hands. You don't get the nickname of Diamond Hands because you're soft, right? Like,
we're not picking fights with Diamond Hands.
Dude, like, if you got a guy with the nickname The Hammer, you don't want to mess with The Hammer, you know, like stuff like that. But Diamond Hands, he got a lifetime ban from the Fed. About a week and a bit ago. This is...
For what? What was the deal?
So, Diamond Hands, I personally love him. I love what he does. The Talking Trash podcast he does with AJ Galante from the Danbury Trashers. I love all their stuff. Those guys are absolute beauties. And I'm a fan of personality, right? So when Diamond Hands goes and posts all of his fights online, when he's beating dudes up, he's like caving their teeth in, caving their forehead in, and talking about, I'm here to protect my team. I'm going to run the first guy that comes after me when I'm back from this or back from that. Like, he is all-encompassing, a nail gun. And I will say also, I don't know if he wants me talking about this, he's got a family of four. He's got a daughter. From what I have heard, he is like the most amazing dad ever. I don't know if he wants me talking about that, but I think... Fighting aside, hockey aside, just being an amazing family man, dude, you got some respect from me. I think at least.
Yeah, I've seen some of his videos, and I love the guy. I found him online, and just for him to like be so open about putting it out there, like while he's playing, making content, like, you know what I mean? And he's a tough player, but he seems like such a nice guy. It seems like that always too, like with fighters. They always seem to be like the nicest guys on the team. Like, I always got along really well with fighters, you know what I'm saying? And he seems like a great guy, but... It's kind of sad to hear he got lifetime ban. Like, how did that come about? Like,
suspended, I think, 18, it might have been 19 games. This is back in, like, November. So he, against Motor City of all teams, he ran a guy's head through the glass, which maybe I can find the video on the video version to put up on the show. I don't think it was worth 18 games, personally. And again, I'm just the goalie. I try to stop pucks. it's none of my business, but I don't think that was worth 18 games, in my professional opinion. However... the suspension was going to expire, I think, next week. It may have been the week after. And out of nowhere, the Fed comes out and says, we're actually giving him an indefinite suspension, so a lifetime ban from the Fed. And from the information I've tried to find, I can't find a reason behind this outside of the Fed posting that he is a threat to the league, and it is in the best interest of the league to get him out of the league. And I thought to myself, so we have dudes in Binghamton beating their wives that are allowed to come play in the league, but a dude posting his fights online... is not allowed to be in the league. A guy posting, come to the Mississippi Seawolves games, come to the Motor City Rockers, come to the Watertown Wolves games, try to bring some fans to the game, is not allowed to play in the league either. I just shake my head. I really do. Like, it is such a shame that Diamond Hands Amesbury is no longer going to be a part of Danbury Hattricks. Excuse me, I was going to say the Trashers for a second. No longer part of the Fed, no longer part of the minor pro hockey circuit, at least for the time being. Like, what... a shame. I'm excited to see where he lands, though. What happens next?
Do you think that's just like showing you too that like the stuff that you're doing and the stuff that like, you know, guys like Diamond Hands is doing, where like putting content out, like, I know you say like, oh, it's going to bring fans into the game, it's going to bring more money, more revenue to the team, but it seems like hockey maybe is not ready yet for that. Like, it's not ready for players to be filming in the locker room and putting content out, talking about the team business. Like, the content that I saw of Diamond Hands was like pretty behind the scenes, you know what I'm saying? And the stuff that you're doing, obviously, is like, nobody's doing that yet, really. You guys are like kind of forging the way, and look, you're getting kind of shoved out, where they're like, no, we don't want that. Like, do you see that happening more, or do you see like teams are just not going to allow players to be talking about locker room business, or it's going to lead to, like, get them out of here. We don't want, like, how many fans are you bringing into the game? You know, obviously, you know, you say you want to bring money to the team, but it's like the stuff that you're doing is obviously... they don't want it, right? Like, it's not like you're changing their balance sheet that much, or they would definitely.
Well, they think so. They think you're not changing the balance sheet, but when the Danbury Hattricks have a sold-out arena and everybody has their Diamond Hands merchandise, everybody's listening to Talking Trash podcast, and everybody has an Amesbury jersey, you can't actually like physically measure that, but you can visually see. Okay, he's bringing people to the rink, all right? Like in Motor City, nobody came to the games, but people came to the practices. Why? To come see me. They would come to the warm-ups, and then they would leave. And like the game would start, they would leave, because they're like, oh, Trav warmed up, so that's it. All right, time to go home now, start the bus, got work at 9. You know what I mean? I think that it's just such a shame, because there's so much potential. That if you put me in the Fed, in Baton Rouge, in Withville, wherever, there is so much potential. Because here's the magic of the Fed. And agree with me or disagree with me on this, I'm curious what you think, Rob. The Fed is personable. right? So like we're in the community, we're interacting with the fans, you have access to us, right? Like in Withville, when I come in, if you want to yell, hey, what time is it in Withville? 12 past Ridgeon, you can do that and I can hear you from behind the glass. You can bring a sign, Ridgeon, you suck. And I'll be able to see it. I'll be able to interact with you. Right? It's a very personal experience. You want to wait outside the team bus, you can chirp me, you can talk to me. Right? Like in Columbus, they had swarms of fans. And I'll put a video on the video version of the show. Swarms of fans waiting outside the arena just to come talk and to come interact. So it's a very, very personal experience. And you have a chance with that personal experience to win these fans over. Right? Like if, for example, in Columbus, some dude during the anthem, when there was a pause in the anthem, it was dead quiet in the ring. He yelled, Trav, you effing suck. Everybody laughed. Everybody heard it, right? But that guy did the same thing when I came outside after the rink or outside of the arena when I came out after and went, hey, man, I appreciate that. I respect that. Thank you. He's like, well, now I can't hate you. And now I got a guy who's probably going to come back to see the next Seawolves game and the next Seawolves game. They released me, so he's probably not going to come back and see any more games anytime soon. But that guy is now a fan, right? That guy cares. And so I think the Fed misses so much on the marketing and the potential of actually putting money in the door. I really think they do.
Yeah, it looks like if the Fed's making money, you know, with influencers, they must not be making that much money. Otherwise, they'd be more happy to have guys making YouTube videos, doing podcasts, talking about the team business. It seems like maybe that's not the case.
I think they're sweating. I think it's definitely a liability in their mind, but I don't think it is. I think at the end of the day, it is a net positive, but they just don't see it from the right lens, in my very, very biased opinion. But I will tell you one thing. If the commissioner of the FPHL and the people that make the decisions had a pair of Sheath underwear, they'd have a much easier time making money with influencers. And I'll tell you why. The team at Sheath Underwear sponsored the podcast. They have been since day one. And they have this incredible bamboo mesh technology. It's cooling. It's comfortable. And God, does our commissioner need a pair. It also has the incredible dual pouch technology. It is a separated, segregated compartment for your dick and your balls to fit into so that they do not touch each other. They do not touch the side of your leg, so you're not sweating, they're not sticking, and you can get a full 12 hour days of worth of work done in one pair of underwear from the team at Sheath. And it's founded by a U.S. member of the military, Robert, not Rob, my co-host, but Robert from Sheath. And right now, you go to the video version on the show, or on the video version of the podcast, on the YouTube description, click that first link at sheathunderwear.com, code BIZKIT69, BIZKIT69 for 20% off the greatest pair of underwear money can buy. Apple, Spotify, podcast notes as well. And thank you to the team at Sheath for sponsoring the podcast, as they always do.
Gotta love Sheath, man. I'm so happy you hooked me up with Sheath. I've been a fan.
You're a lifetime convert, and it makes me so happy because you're always using the competitors, and now you love Sheath. We all love Sheath.
Yeah, dude. You got me on board.
Once you've had a taste of the best, nothing quite compares.
It was those ads right there that I just get to listen to now.
Hey, and Mr. Producer, you can confirm this. This is a live ad read. I don't read off a piece of paper. I don't read off the laptop. I just go. I got to memorize and we rock and roll. Right, Mr. Producer, are you there? Check, check, mic check.
Yep, you're there.
We live here? We live.
Mr. Producer's there. He's there. He's not left me. That's great. Lights are still on. But one thing I did want to mention too. One of the guys from Motor City did reach out after we talked about the vibes and whatnot that we had in the locker room when you and I were there, and said that things have changed quite a bit. It's not quite the same
dynamic. Really?
Yeah.
What's going on in the room? What's going on with the boys?
I think a team functions off of its quote-unquote leadership group. So like captain, assistant captain, the guys that really kind of run the room. And when you shuffle those guys out and shuffle them in for new guys, I think that really dictates the direction of the ship, if you want to call that. And also, I think my life coach, TC Cummings, he said the same. It's that if you want to find out what the CEO is like, ask the bottom level employees, because they carry the mantra and the mindset and the philosophies of the CEO, whether he admits it or not. Right? Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, the fish rots from the head down, as they say.
Ooh, that is a very spicy one. I like that. Clip that, Mr. Producer. Put that on TikTok, please. That's fantastic. I did want to also make a couple comments too. Somebody asked me this the other day, and I thought this got me really thinking. And this doesn't happen often that I think, but this did get me thinking. They asked me, is playing in the Fed lonely? And it got me thinking, not just the Fed, the East Coast, the SP, the American League, minor pro hockey. Is minor pro hockey itself lonely? Because let's say I go to Motor City, I make a couple friends, right? Like Big Sexy, probably my best friend there in Motor City. Haven't seen him since I left. I go to Watertown, make a couple friends, probably never going to see them again. Go to Mississippi, a couple other guys, probably never going to see them again either. Like you meet all these people, you make quote-unquote hockey friends, but you never really get in quote-unquote in bed friendship-wise. And I wanted to ask you, as somebody who played 4 years a pro as well, like, do you think playing pro hockey is lonely?
I don't think it's lonely. I remember being, you know, having those experiences like you just mentioned, making really good friends and being really close with a lot of my teammates. But I also know exactly what you're talking about, where like the season, you'll have a team that's so tight 1 year and the team is bonding and you got four or five like really good boys and like you're friends with a lot of other guys on the team. And then, you know, you think it's like, you know, these are like my boys. And then all of a sudden the season ends. You know, the summer happens, the next year it's a new team, and you lose touch with a lot of the guys. I've stayed friends with, like, a handful, you know, of really good friends throughout the years of guys. But for the most part, some of my best friends, you're right, like, the season ends, guys move on, guys go home, and you kind of lose touch a little bit. And I think that happens across the board in hockey. But I would say that I wouldn't consider my time in pro hockey and college hockey lonely. You know, yeah, I haven't stayed in touch with like every single player or all the guys I was super good friends with at the time. But during those times, those friendships were really impactful, really meaningful. And like being together as a group, I think it provides a good environment for, you know, for people to not be lonely. You know what I'm saying? It's tough because especially at the pro level, you know how it is. You're competing, right? So like your best friend might be a defenseman. Like I was a defenseman. One of my best friends was a defenseman. And literally we were competing for ice time. We were competing for jobs. So it was like, that's a bit of a challenge. But I think throughout the course of the year and through like playing with the guys day in and day out, like having a group of guys that you're there with and talking to, for me, it didn't feel lonely personally. I actually really enjoyed my experience as a hockey player, being a part of a team and also being a part of a community. Like wherever I went, like even in college and playing, you know, in the minors and pro, like we had great support from the local community where I became friends with people in the community and we had a booster club and we had, you know, a lot, you see a lot of the familiar faces at some of the, at the events, at the autograph signings. And it just made me feel like I always felt like I was part of the community everywhere I went. And, I never really had the feeling of being lonely, to be honest with you. So, man, I would say I disagree. I don't know. I always felt being a part of a team felt very, a lot of camaraderie, and I made good friendships then. And I'm still in touch with some of those guys, but, yeah, man, that's kind of how I feel about that situation.
Oh, maybe sleeping on the garage floor is what made it feel a little lonely.
Yeah, I think sleeping on the garage floor, you know, in the cold garage might make you feel lonely. And then, like, I don't know, man. Like, I definitely was, like, questioning things when I'm, like, you know, the house, the wolf spiders are crawling around in my room. And I'm like, oh, man, I don't know if this is for me. But I don't know. Maybe, yeah, the house spiders kept me company, so I wasn't really super lonely. But
I don't know. If to all the listeners, I'm curious. Leave a comment in the YouTube comment section. Do you think playing pro hockey is lonely? And what do you think about the things we talked about earlier with Diamond Hands, Amesbury getting a lifetime ban, and the Fed missing out on so much financial opportunities by having people like myself and him there and more. But I did want to finish this week's episode off with a Q&A. This is going to be a little bit of a shorter episode. If you are the patron on the Patreon page, again, it's $5 a month to join. You can ask a question, and this is where they all come from. I want to give a shout out first off to Joe and Ziva, the family in Watertown, my booster family. Joe asked, could the duck be in the podcast? So Ziva gave me this little like rubber ducky. And I put it in my locker room stall when I was in Watertown. It's at my mom's right now. I didn't bring it with me to Vancouver, but when I go back, I'm going to get it, and we'll put it on the podcast. So hope you guys are well. A couple other questions. Mark Bezidin asked, Trav, are you going to play this year? I'm trying, dude. I'm playing in a native tournament as we speak right now, as you're listening to this live. I got all the other things coming up in Colorado and Banff and hopefully some other tournaments as well. So will I play in the Fed? Likely not, but I will be playing. Depends on the mountain you define. A couple other questions. Joey asked about the Amesbury suspension. That's why that was in this week's episode of the podcast. He also asked, is there any situation specifically that you would, or a team, that would you like to handle things differently? And I think hindsight is always 50-50. I think it's very fair to say that, like, you look back in perspective, like, oh, I could have done this better, I could have done that better. I did the best that I could with every opportunity and every situation I had. In Motor City, I tried to make the most of it. I don't think I was going to succeed there long term. So things ended the way that they did. Watertown, I don't think I was going to see a lot of success there either with the environment that I was in. It was the way that it is. Mississippi, I think that their hands were tied by some other powers that be, which maybe that will make its way into the untold Mississippi Seawolf stories one day on the Patreon page, but I'll leave it at that for now. I don't like to look back and say I should have done this or changed this, because I look back introspectively about, okay, moving forward, what am I going to do better, but not dwelling on like what can I change about something that I have no power over. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I think only control the things you can control, you know, and then let the fate happen. But just, you know, keep working hard and keep controlling the things that you can, you know, influence in your life.
Well, and like I said, it doesn't
really don't worry about those things that are out of your control. It's not good energy.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Another question comes from Brian Lopez. Would you consider playing pro in Europe or a country that's more developing, like an Australia or Japan? Absolutely, dude. Hockey is awesome, and it is my portal to see the world. If it's Australia, Japan, I'm open-minded to anything and everything. I would love to go back to Norway first. That's my top of the list, but anything else is open as well. There's nothing being written off the table at this moment in time.
Is there anywhere you wouldn't play?
China, because I'd be scared to go there. Or
what? Come on, man.
Or the Ukraine.
The China Sharks?
Or the Ukraine.
You'd be afraid to go to China? No.
Well, those are two places I would be scared to go. I mean, my agent convinced me to go to a tournament in Russia, so clearly I'm not that far away from saying yes.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. Nah. So Ukraine, China, those are the only two that you wouldn't do?
Yeah, I think that those are the only ones that come to my mind at this point in time.
I would go both places. I don't know. Maybe not Ukraine right now. Maybe that'd probably steer clear of that.
Yeah, but maybe now's not a good time.
Everywhere else would be on the table. Yeah.
Oh, that's a good one. Couple other questions we had. This was a really good one. Coach Dana asks, what made you decide to not drink alcohol at all? It's cool to let kids and adults and other athletes know that not everybody has to do it. And funny enough, my co-host on the other line of this call doesn't drink at all. I don't know about you, Rob. My thought processing was the last time I drank was I was 21. My girlfriend at the time got the nickname Trav's Babysitter for my junior team, which I think tells you everything you need to know. And then I just made a decision one day that I was like, okay, I'm making poor choices. I don't like being out of control of my body. It's expensive, and it doesn't look good in the calorie waistline. So why don't we just gas it all together and make myself the most productive version of myself, especially in today's climate. As a man, I don't want to be out of control of my body and potentially leave myself open to potential headaches that don't necessarily need to be there. Does that make sense? If I can say that without saying it. Does that make sense, Rob?
Yeah, and honestly, man, your lifestyle was something I looked at as I was influenced by it, just to see you as a young guy not, you know, giving into the culture of drinking. And that's something that I had to discover a little bit later in my life and in my career. As a younger person, like, I was very much in that hockey culture of like beers with the boys and like in college, you know, partying, and like I you know, was a partying hockey player, if you will. And it was something that I decided later in my life after I was done playing, unfortunately in some ways, but also like fortunately in other ways. I thought about this a lot. I stopped drinking about, I think, almost 10 years ago after I was done playing. And for a lot of the reasons you mentioned, like, I wanted to be a better version of myself, and I just wanted to be, you know, have a more impactful life, I guess, and more be more like more influential. And drinking was something that I thought was holding me back. And I think, you know, looking back on it, like, as a player, I think my drinking habits might have cost me opportunities that at the time I didn't really see it. When I was a young guy, I wanted it all. I wanted to play hockey at a high level, and then after the games, I wanted to go out with my teammates, and I wanted to have fun. And, you know, I grew up in the era of, like, yeah, like, we win a game, and, like, the team gets a 30 rack of beers on the bus, and I was going to drink a bunch of them. And
I think also you don't meet the people that you want to affiliate with. Like, if you're going to the clubs, you're not going to meet people that are going to be, like we talked about last episode, those people, like, you want to be successful, hang around successful people. You want to make some money, hang around people that make really, like, a lot of money. If you want to hang around people that are in those environments, those are not going to be net positive individuals. I don't think personally. Nothing against them. It's not for me personally. So that's kind of...
Yeah. And I was, like I said, like, I looked up to you because you found that out and you discovered that at a young age where, you know, you've lived your life in a certain way, and not having alcohol be a part of it is cool, man. And it's for something for me, like, not drinking anymore has changed my life for the better and in an order of magnitude. I can't even put a number on it. And I wouldn't go back to that lifestyle. And I'm glad I discovered it. And I look, you know, like I said, I think I look up to you that you were able to do that as a younger person. And I encourage people that if they're, you know, struggling with that, especially athletes, if you're struggling or if you think you might want to change your lifestyle, that better times await, you know, away from that, like, alcohol fueled, the good times. And like, there's other ways to do it. So yeah, I think it's great. I think it's a great question. And I think it's really important that we talk about it, because I think, you know, a lot of, especially young people, young athletes are influenced by the culture and by the whole, you know, drinking lifestyle. And there's just a better way. And it you don't have to have it if you, you know, it's something you think you might not want.
Well, and I also, this is another question that Dana asked that was kind of in that realm. He said, I talk about myself being ADHD somewhat frequently. I'm not diagnosed ADHD, but I think I have a lot of the characteristics of it. And sometimes it gives me a hard time focusing on whether it's producing the podcast or on the ice, just because my brain goes in so many different directions. But I don't define myself as ADHD. Like, ADHD is something that I'm working with, if that makes sense. And I'm trying to pull the reins in on certain things so I can get stuff done, because I can get things done at a very high level because of it, but sometimes I can also venture outside of that realm. I don't take any medication for it. I just, listen, I have some ADHD. It doesn't find me. I'm trying to use the best mindset and the best software on my mind to get the most out of it, if that makes sense. Does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, and I think, you know, some of these things that we have in our lives are there for kind of like a reason, I guess, like, you know, depression that you have, or like anxiety. Like, these are actually like things in your body that push you to, you know, think a certain way. If you have anxiety about something, like, your body's trying to tell you something. Or if you're depressed about something, maybe there's a other reason for it. And, you know, I also kind of agree with you, where in my own life, I'm not the kind of person who wants to run to the pill bottle to sort of solve those problems. So
And I'll use this as an analogy too, and some people may not like this. So, for example, if somebody said, listen, I just got cut from my Fed team. I don't know what I'm going to do. I just lost my other co-host for the podcast. Girlfriend left me. I'm depressed. No, you're not depressed because of that. That all happened because you're depressed. Does that make sense? Right? Like, it's a mindset and a mind frame that you put on that. You could look at that and be depressed, or say, oh, wait, girlfriend left me. I have an amazing opportunity now to find somebody that's really going to make me happy, and I have more free time to focus on my work. Team just got rid of me. All right, great. Now I can really put some time into this podcast and take it to the next level, take my fitness seriously, start the next chapter in my life. Lost my co-host? Great. I got a new co-host now that I can make the best of, and I can take this network deal to the next level. Right? Right? Mindset. It's all perspective. That's it. Sorry, I went off a little bit of a rant.
Well, no, that's it, man. It's the mindset, like you just said. That's really all it's about, you know, turning the negatives into positives, you know. There's a quote I actually learned in China when I was over there doing some work back in the day when we were first starting our company, called the Chinese have this, and I'm going to mess this up, but it's they say it's Wei Zhong Ji, and it means crisis and opportunity. So that's how you look at things. When things are bad in your life, that's a crisis. And because of that, now you have an opportunity. And if you can apply that to any aspect of your life, you know, it turns all the negatives into the positive.
Adversity builds character. Didn't we say we weren't a men's inspirational podcast last time? Didn't we say we weren't going to do that anymore?
We'll keep flowing, man.
Well, anyway, thank you so much for listening to the show. If you want to ask a question, join the Patreon page. Again, $5 a month. Thank you to the amazing team at Sheath for sponsoring the show. My good-looking co-host in Buffalo, New York, Rob Lelonde in Buffalo, New York. My Mr. Producer and Mr. Producer's intern in the back here at Wall Center at the Nation Networks Production Studio in downtown Vancouver. I'm Travis Ridgen, your former FPHL goaltender, currently unemployed at the moment. Thank you for listening. We do new episodes of Sling the Biscuit every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 in Winnipeg, 9 in Calgary, 8 here on the Pacific Northwest. We'll see you next Sunday. Thanks for listening.